Hello, career competitor. This is Steve Meller, as always, here to share with you some powerful conversation and some significant insights into what it means to optimize your career in pursuit of your optimal self. I am excited to be introducing our guest here shortly. But as always, let me draw your attention to careercompetitor.com, where you'll see right at the top of that homepage is a place where you can enter your email and become a part of my monthly subscription, my mid-monthly message, where I am just simply giving you that little nudge in the middle of the month to remember that whatever it was you set out to achieve with all that energy at the outset of the month, and whatever those lofty goals may be at the end of the month, that you're not going to lose sight of that journey in between. Become a part of my community today. Head to careercompetitor.com, enter your email, and look forward to my next mid-monthly message. Now, let's get right into the show. Hello there, and welcome in to this episode of Career Competitor, where I'm welcoming in a gentleman that I got to know through competition for many years when I was coaching within the SEC, and that is McGee Moody. And I'm going to give McGee the introduction he deserves here in just a moment, but here's a few things to be listening out for within our discussion. Firstly, McGee helps us see how your perspective toward time can help you slow down and appreciate it more. Secondly, we cover why we develop non-negotiables within a culture in order to recruit like-minded people. And finally, we discuss the power of incorporating optimism when outcomes seem so far away. So these three things and so much more within this conversation where I got a chance to catch up with a former competitor of mine, McGee Moody, and I'm excited to see what you guys think of this one. So please enjoy. Okay, our career competitor today is a former NCAA college swimming coach of 25 years with stops at East Carolina University, U.S. Naval Academy, the College of William & Mary, and 15 years as the head coach at the University of South Carolina. Having coached numerous SEC champions, NCAA All-Americans, and Olympians, our guest retired from coaching in 2021 to pursue an opportunity in the financial field. Having retired from swim coaching and started a new career along almost an identical timeline as myself, our guest can provide insights on how their history of coaching at the highest level of sports is now serving them away from sports. I'm excited to be welcoming into Career Competitor this former adversary of mine, Mr. McGee Moody. McGee, how are we doing, brother?
Good. How are you, sir? It's good to see you.
You too, man. You too. I'm excited to dive into this one. I really appreciate you reaching out a number of months ago, and I've been following everything that you've been doing. And I think that's a great place for us to start because, like I joked about there in the intro, we're on a very similar timeline of walking away from the sport of swimming and going into something different now. What is life like now for McGee Moody? Just give us this sort of, it's March 11th today. Like, what is a typical day for McGee?
It's crazy because when I was coaching, you know, I had some, you know, mentors that would retire and they stepped away from the sport, and they talked about how much slower life moved outside the coaching world. And I was like, you know, whatever. Okay. It's all I had ever known was that speed of coaching. And same thing with you. The speed of being a college athlete moved right into being, you know, the speed of being a college coach. And that wears on you after a while. It really starts to kind of break you down. And if you don't find that good balance, that strong balance, then it can wear you out. And so moving through my coaching career, I kind of came to this point where it was time to shift gears. But the main thing that I found in transitioning from being a college coach into the financial world was time. That was the biggest thing that opened up to me was time. And instead of my job telling me what I was going to be doing all the time, I had the opportunity to tell my time what it was going to do for me. There was a freedom in that I had never really known before. I think just the amount of time that I now have available to my family, that I have available to my wife, They and you know me, Steve. That they are my life. They are my world.
Sure,
like my,
sure.
my I have four daughters, and they are the most important thing on this planet to me, is my family. And so being able to kind of reconnect and in some ways making up for lost time with them has been invaluable. And then also the challenges of stepping way out of my comfort zone into something new and basically leaning into that head on and creating these new opportunities for myself. And it's been great. You know, it is a different world. It's definitely a different world. Mm-hmm. But one that I think I needed desperately.
Yeah, so much to unpack right away. And you know, I have to mention this before I forget to, but the reason why you and I even communicated was we somehow bumped into one another in Disney World.
That's the most random thing I think has most, ever happened.
Right, we the most crazy.
We bumped into each other in Disney right. World. And just went, hey.
McGee, right? I haven't seen you in a bit. And of all the places, because there's no busier place on Earth to bump into another human. But it actually, what's so funny is that we met at a time where up until we both left some coaching, we wouldn't have been doing that. You know, we wouldn't have been 100%. In Disney. We wouldn't have been with our family, you know, finding even just a weekend, never mind a period of days in the middle of the summer. It was almost impossible to do that. And so the first thing you touched on there is this notion of time and what it, you know, how you're able to now really, in many ways, control your time. And I'm curious, when you look back on this world of swim coaching, because there's so many people that listen to this that come from other worlds respectively that also find the real battle of just saying, hey, my schedule isn't going to be the thing that runs my life. I'm going to run my schedule. When you look at what you've learned here in the last couple of years, let's say you could go back 5-10 years, what might you be able to apply that you've learned here in the last couple of years that could have been possible that you could have implemented while you were so busy with coaching?
You know, I think, well, I'll start by saying I still to this day, I believe coaching is one of the greatest professions ever created.
No doubt.
It's such a great job. The responsibility that comes alongside of that with the opportunity to shape young people's lives, the opportunity to motivate and to help them see themselves the way you and I saw our athletes, help them see themselves that way is hard to replace in any way, shape, or form. However, if I had to go back, and I think the first time I ever really started thinking about this, you know, Coach Greg Troy, who was the head coach down at the University of Florida for years. He and I were very, very close friends. And as he started to retire and move away from the coaching profession at the University of Florida, or at least scale back his time, he and I were talking on the phone one day, and I asked him, I said, you know, if you had to do it again, what would you change? And he told me, he said, I would take 1 week in a month completely away from the sport and completely devote it to my family. And he said, 1 week in a month. He said, because what you realize once you retire is that all these things that you poured your time into, 95% of it can wait. And the one thing that can't is your family.
Right.
And so I think if I had to go back and look at it now, I think it's difficult, Steve, because I think college athletics is moving in such a direction that the environment that has been created inside of college sports is one that if you're awake, you have to be coaching. If you're not coaching, you're falling behind because somebody else is. And if you're falling behind, then you're losing. And if you're losing, you're gone and you're of no value to this university.
Right.
Loyalty is out the window.
Right.
And so what happens is that mindset takes over, not just in coaching, but everybody in college athletics, fundraising, administration, all the way down to the administrative assistants, is this mindset of I've got to be working all the time. And that's very destructive. It's very destructive. And I think I've seen coaches leave the profession because of that. Myself, I think it got the best of me. It affected my coaching over time. And I wasn't able to apply myself the way I felt my swimmers deserved that. But I think if I had to go back now, it would be with the understanding that you can't, I've said this before, but you can't be all in all the time. You have to really pick and choose these places where you are all in. And then there's got to be times where you got to pull back. And you've got to pull back on the reins a little bit and say, okay, I need to breathe. And then when it's time, go all back, all the way in. And with college athletics, there's never another gear. If the door cracks open, you're kicking it down and you're running through it 100 miles an hour. And there's so many different things now that are going on in college athletics that just scream that, I think that's the big thing is going back and realizing that the pace you need to pay more attention to the pace and to prioritize the right things.
I love the way you sum that up, because that's important. That notion of you can't be all in all the time. And if you think you are, chances are you're just incrementally less all in. Your all in is consistently lowering to the point of where, like you say, you look yourself in the mirror one day, or you finish a season 1 year and you just go, shoot, I got nothing left. I'm out. Yep. You know, I've been given all in for so long. And that in itself is it's an important lesson for anybody to learn, no matter the career. And I really want to focus on so much of the progress and then the successes that you obviously had, not only throughout your coaching career, but even in just the building of your career 2.0 beyond swim coaching, because as someone who's gone through it, there's not too many people that are going to be able to stop us in our tracks while we're doing this and be able to say, attaboy, keep going. You're doing some great stuff. So it's important to acknowledge these moments, but I'm curious when you look back on the sport now, before I sort of move into what you've been doing more so today, when you think about those moments of success, when the athlete really just found the ultimate performance in the biggest of moments, you know, what were some of the keys, man? Like, what were some of the examples of those athletes that you worked with over the years where you just like, because they were this, because they delivered this in anything and everything they did, come that big moment when the light was on them, they were able to shine?
I think I'll go back probably about 7 years now. And you remember these guys that I'm about to talk about. We at South Carolina, I had an associate head coach and you know, Coach Mark Bernardino very, very well. Sure. Coach Mark was he was the head coach at University of Virginia for 30, 35 years, I think. And came down to be my associate head coach at South Carolina. And we had, when Mark came in, we had an incoming class that was very talented. They were very talented. There was five or six guys there that had a lot of potential. And as they came in, what I realized was, okay, athletically, they're very talented, but there was something different about their mindset and their approach to performance. There was something different about their mindset and their approach to preparation. There was something different about their mindset and their approach to the intangibles that the non-negotiables in their mind. And I was like, okay, now we may have something really special here with these guys. And ultimately, as they went through their freshman year, there was a ton of success. I remember, you remember Akram Mahmood, who was a distance swimmer for South Carolina. He came in and in his first dual meet, did a sub 15 minute 1650 and broke our school record by 7 seconds. and I remember thinking, okay, well, the athletic side is pretty much there now. Right. Now, you know, can we take this forward? And this core group of young men over 4 years developed this standard that they were not willing to compromise. They whoever came in behind them and underneath them, behind them in years and classes and ability and talent, whoever came in with them as teammates, there was a standard that group was going to uphold, and it was a non-negotiable. If you weren't going to do that, you weren't going to be a part of that team, that movement forward. Mm-hmm. And that group was arguably the most successful that have ever come through South Carolina. I think our we finished 11th, I think, in NCAAs in 2016, I believe. Mm-hmm. But these performances that I saw, we had one young man, Tom Parabonio, who up until a couple of years ago was one of only three men on the planet who had ever gone under 14:45 in the mile, who had ever gone under 4:11 in the 500, and who had gone under 3:41 in the 400 IM. And he was kind of the catalyst. He was the captain of that group. And he set the standard from a mindset to work ethic to all of it. And so I think, you know, when I look back, there was a group of men that came in and I don't know if it was, you know, I think we got really, I don't want to say lucky because we worked really hard in that recruiting cycle, but I think where we got lucky was not only did these young men come in and they were talented, but they were very like-minded. Mm. And so they held each other to a very high standard. And I think what it produced over time was just some unbelievable performances, some great NCAA finishes, multiple Southeastern Conference champions, and Olympians. You know, Akram went on to swim the mile at the Olympics. Tom Perabonio went on to swim in the Olympics. So to me, it was as much the first thing, not so much their athletic ability. It was how they thought that was different than men that had come in before them.
Yeah, I love that. It's such a, again, from a cultural standpoint, to get at the heart of talent, you know, in this day and age, there's very few conversations around culture, whether that be both within the sports world or in the business world, that doesn't start with a conversation about talent. And so in some way, talent has to be considered. There's no doubt. But so much of what you're saying here, to speak to the mindset and the approach that they took in everything that they did, and to know that the work, the preparation, the non-negotiables, that way of just simply being and doing and thinking was so consistent because of the who, not because of what they were, but because of the who. And to be able to recruit like-minded individuals, there's very few ways that you can do that, but there are ways you can do that. And you can ask the right questions. You can bring in whatever it is around them to let them know that, hey, not only do we want this kind of mind around, but we actually welcome it. We welcome you bringing this to the practice, to the environment, to the culture, so that more people hopefully can buy into it over time. And as coaches, sometimes the best thing we can do in those cases is get the hell out of the way and let them do their thing. I'm curious now, when you think about those kind of lessons and what you're doing in your work today, where do you still see opportunities for you to, let's say, take all this wisdom, all this experience that you obviously had at the top of this sport, and be able to apply it now within the world of business, and you're working within financial area as well? Like, where are you now able to take some of this experience and insert it into this different world?
So when I got ready to make this change over, the story's kind of funny. One of my closest friends here in Columbia, South Carolina, is a guy named Ken Calcutt, and he owns Cornerstone Financial Management, which is who I work for now. Mm-hmm. And for years, he had kind of joked around and been like, hey, you know, I know that coaching life's tough. You need to come over here and go to work with us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would kind of go, that's funny, huh? It kind of became a punchline after a while. And then as things started to, when COVID came through, and you remember this, how unbelievably brutal that was on coaches and on athletes, on everyone. Mm-hmm. But the things that in college athletics, the facade of we're stepping back was just that. It was a facade. Mm-hmm. I was told at one point by my athletic director, you're allowed to practice with 4 athletes at a time. I had 72 athletes on my roster.
Right.
I don't know if he couldn't quite put the math together or what, but there's not enough hours in the day.
Right.
But and when I said that, his response back was, I'm sure you'll figure it out. When we went through that time period, you know, and you started to kind of ask questions, hey, can I keep doing this? So Ken comes along and we have our normal conversation. He's like, ah, man, you need to come work with me. Stop dealing with all that mess over there. And there was just something that kind of went on inside of me. And I'm like, how do you see this happening? How do you see this taking place? Why do you keep saying this to me? Right. And he said, well, think about what you do as a coach. He said, you have an athlete that sits down across the table from you and says, I want to become an Olympian. Your job as the head coach is to create that pathway for them, create a strategy, create a plan that they can follow that takes them from where they are to where they want to be. He said, now look at what you're doing, what you would be doing as an advisor. You have someone that comes in and says, hey, I want to retire at age 55. Is this possible? Your job as the financial advisor is to create this pathway for them to get there. Now the language is a little bit different, but the problem solving and the strategy is the same. And so all of a sudden he starts connecting these dots between being a coach and being an advisor and a planner, you know, to help people. And then he said, think about the other thing. He said, you know, when you're a college coach, you know, 75 to 80% of your job is recruiting. It never stops. Mm-hmm. He said, so you sit down across the table from an athlete and their parents, and you convince your that athlete that your program is going to help them more than anyone else's. And you convince that parent that you're going to take better care of their children than anyone else will. And he said, if you can convince a parent to turn their children over to you, then you can talk to a client about letting you manage their money. To which I replied, I met a lot of parents that will part with their children before they'll part with their money. but I started thinking about it. I went back to my wife and I'm like, you know, he's really thought about this. Like, this is not just something that he's shooting from the hip on. There is a certain type of person that he wants to bring in to the company that fits the dynamic that he's trying to build. Mm-hmm. And so I found myself thinking about this a lot more. And I'm like, he really does think I'm a good fit for this. He thinks I can be effective and successful in this world. And I think that's one of the main things that especially coaches, Steve, like coaches, they're so afraid of outside the coaching world because all they've ever been is a coach. Right. All I've ever done is coach. And all of a sudden, when you look at it from the outside, coaches do everything. Like everything from budgeting to logistics to human resources to student athlete relationships with coaches and things like that. You're managing all these little things. Mm-hmm. These are all things that carry over into the business world. But coaches think of it as all I've ever done is coach.
Right.
And there's so much of a difference there as things cross over. What I found when I made that transition over to this business, the first thing that Ken Calcutt, one of my closest friends and my now boss, the first thing he said to me, I said, I'm ready to go to work on Monday. He said, no. He said, I know what your life has been like for the last 25 years. He said, the first thing I'm going to tell you to do as your new boss is to take a month off. You need to breathe. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I would have never said that to someone, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't think that way, but
right.
Look back on it now, and he's so in tune with his employees and what they need and what helps them thrive and what their strengths are and what role they fit into our company is amazing. And so I've learned a lot from him from a leadership standpoint, and he admittedly has said, you know, I need you to kind of take this leadership role because you've got more leadership experience than anybody.
Right.
And so we've kind of, you know, we've got a lot of things going on with our company right now in terms of growth and change and strategy. And he said, you know, I come sit down with me. Is it? And he'll just go flat out. Is this going to work? Can mm-hmm. we do this way?
Right.
What will people think when we try to move this forward? And so, you know, to me, it's so much like coaching. It's so much like coaching when you talk to clients and when you're having advisor meetings and you're planning and you're strategizing, you remember the staff meetings. It's the same thing. It really is the same thing.
Yeah. It's funny that, you know, one area that I've really spent a lot of time reflecting on since I left swim coaching in my work now with executives and business owners is the appetite in corporate America right now is for growth mindset. They mm-hmm. really want people, either the person running the company or people within the organization, to be really focused on growth mindset. And what's really interesting about what you're saying here, McGee, is that so often, so, like in our world from swimming, a lot of those coaches are actually showing up very fixed in their mindset, assuming that they're doing this sort of one-dimensional job, mm-hmm. you know. And it's so far from that. It's so far from that because again, people reach out to me and they say, "Hey, how did you just sort of start running your own business?" It's like, you tell me in your day as a swim coach, what about it is entrepreneurial? Like the whole day is entrepreneurial. The whole day. The spirit of an entrepreneur is swim coaching. And right. again, so if you have any doubt that you've got the chops to go and start your own business,
yeah.
you shouldn't have it. You shouldn't have it because you've done it. You know,
I tell this story all the time, but you know, you never know. As a coach, you may be sitting meeting with a recruit and their family. And then the next minute you may be meeting with the top level administrators at your university, and you may walk out of that meeting and you may end up chasing a UPS truck down the street because a box got left on the truck that has your championship suits in it. Like there's no job description to it, right? Like you do whatever has to be done to be successful. And I think part of moving over into this side of life and having that mindset, because it is a little bit different. Like,
oh yeah,
people fall at the outside world falls into the, that's not in my job description. And I never knew there was no guidelines for a job description when I was a coach. If it needed right. to be done, we went and did it. And if you needed to travel, you went and traveled. And if you needed to be in a meeting, you were there. And if you had to meet with a recruit, you took them around. Like it was, you do what you have to do to be successful. And so I think when you move into this world that I'm in now, the beauty of it is like I said, I discovered time. Mm-hmm. And so I can now tell that time what to do, except that I still have this mindset of do whatever it takes to be successful.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Now
yeah.
I got the time. Like I can actually work through these things. And so to me, it's kind of been this perfect recipe, not only good for me and my family, but good for kind of my mind. Like I get to kind right. of reevaluate and kind of kickstart things again. It's awesome.
Yeah, man. No doubt. And again, the one thing I always preface with all of this stuff that we're talking about right now is this is not my campaign for anybody that's in some coaching to like up and leave and go your thing. Like, and again, I know you're not saying that either, but I think the one thing that anybody listens to this, whether you come from a background in sports coaching or have nothing to do with sports coaching, the fact of the matter is that there's always going to be a time in that career where you may find yourself just going a little bit too far. Yes. Your day's a little bit longer than you wanted it to be. Your workload's a little bit greater than you wanted it to be. And at some point, you got to ask the big questions in those moments. Like, is it all worth it? Is this where I want to be? If the answer is yes, then great. But you can still double click on that situation and say, well, beneath the surface, what else am I dealing with right here? Why is it my day seems to be running so long? Why is it my workload never seems to stop? How can I maybe have a conversation with someone about this in a way where it doesn't seem as though I'm complaining? It's more about I want to try to master the art of being efficient and being effective at the same time. Right. You know, and I think that is something in the world of sports coaching, specifically NCAA coaching, when you think about the recruiting and all this kind of thing, is that a lot of the time it's a lot of hamster wheel stuff. And if we can just be a little bit more, well, hey, why don't we just look at the bigger picture here? How can we maybe all collaborate a little bit more effectively? How can we all maybe coexist a little bit more? I think there's ways that we can sort of tackle that. That might be for another podcast to talk about college coaching and all that kind of thing.
Right, right.
But my point being is, like, again, no matter where you find yourself, there's always an opportunity to press pause and just ask some of these meaningful questions. Because I think you and I are both saying here that we were guilty of that when we were sim coaches, that there was probably times we could have easily pressed pause and we just chose not to. And we told ourselves there's no time to. And lo and behold, there probably was, right?
Oh, without question, there was. But when you're in the middle of it, you don't see it, right? Yeah. Like, you know, if you're 10 feet underwater, it's hard to see above the surface.
Right.
And that's kind of where I felt like, you know, you end up sometimes is that you're spinning your wheels. Like you said, the hamster wheel, you're spinning your wheels and you got to keep going. Cause if you stop, they're going to kick you off the wheel.
Right.
So you got to keep going. But, you know, you're right. It's never, to me, this is not about, oh, well, people should get out of coaching and move into something different. Absolutely not. To me, it is about, hey, coaching is one of the greatest professions on the planet. Make it more effective by taking care of ourselves along the way. Mm-hmm. We can become so much better coaches if we're not exhausted all the time. Right. We can be better for our athletes if we're able to engage more. And we would run ourselves so thin that we weren't able to do that. And you're right. That's cross industry, right? That doesn't just go with coaching. I know teachers that are stretched so thin right now that they don't know what to do. They serve as security guards. They serve as teachers. They serve as lunchroom people. They're stretched too thin. It's like that in every industry. But when we figure out what are the important things inside our realm of influence that we have to control and we have to, that we can really pour into that are meaningful, and kind of create time around those. I think that makes those that are in a coaching profession much more effective and gives them a longer lasting career.
There you go. And that's it, man. It's a game of endurance. It's not a sprint, you know, right. And that's coming from a former sprint coach. You know, it's just like that. It's a game. It's an endurance game. And I think, you know, so much of what I loved about what you've shared here, brother, is like, you know, you're talking about the foundational components of long-term success, you know, that self-care, as you just touched on there, and all these areas, these potential blind spots. But you also talked a little bit about how we can actually excel, how we can hit those tops of the mountain moments as well. And I'm curious, just with all of this being said, we're all about competing on this show. And what are you doing to keep that sword sharp, man? Because I know you're a competitor. There's no way that part of you is just going to suddenly vanish. So what are you doing to keep that competitive edge in you to, you know, fulfilled at this point in your life?
Well, I still do coach a little bit. Mm-hmm. I have the opportunity to coach my daughter's high school team. Mm-hmm. In a much more fun, laid back way. High school coaching is so awesome because you got some kids that are so dialed into swimming, and you got some kids that could not care less.
Right.
And so you get to play and you get to kind of redo things. But from a competitive, like for me, I'm a very competitive person. I like to win. And I've always loved physical challenges. I've always loved kind of pushing my own physical limits to see what I could do. About 5.5, almost 6 years ago, I started training Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and I absolutely love that. And I compete in that. I actually have in, 2 weeks, I've got the Pan Championships down in Orlando, Florida I'm going to go down and compete in. And so I do kind of take that. And I think you touch on something kind of important there. Like you have to find what parts of your spirit kind of need pushing. And for me, it is that competitive little bug. I have to keep challenging myself. I have to challenge my mind. I have to challenge my body. I have to just kind of keep evolving, I guess is the best way to say it. And for so sure. Finding those things have really kind of helped me along. But to me, Keeping in tune with kind of the coaching side and having a lot more fun with it now, having the opportunity to coach my daughter, that's really cool. That's one of the coolest things. And then doing something from a physical standpoint that helps me to continue to compete and keep trying to push myself to win and train harder and do things like that is pretty important.
It's incredibly important, and no doubt. And I think what you're touching on here is what we're all about on the show, this notion of the optimal self. And, you know, the optimal self, as I explain time and time again to clients and on the show, it's an endless pursuit, but it's a beautiful thing that it's an endless pursuit. We never have to stop pursuing it because it's a version of ourself that we can always be working toward and improving upon. And that's what you're doing right now. And I think what is so, you know, for me as someone that gets to watch this from afar, having watched you through social media and all this kind of thing, I think what I love about it is that you are showing yourself an element of humility in that process too. You're willing to put yourself out there and literally get your butt kicked, and so often we get to a point in our careers where we want to kind of protect and shelter ourselves from that. We want to, you know, hey, I'm at this point now. The last thing I want is for people to see that, you know, I've got some weaknesses, I can be exploited, whatever it is. And for you to actually use a literal physical element within your life to challenge you in that way and leave you vulnerable to defeat, leave you vulnerable to significant lessons, things that can literally get you hurt, you know, like that is such a powerful thing that you're doing. And I think from, like I said, from a distance watching you, I love that because, again, there's elements of my life that I pride myself around that too. But to see you doing it, I think is such a wonderful way to set that tone and set that standard to so many around you and continue to build that respect for what you do as well in the process, man.
Well, and you know, it's interesting that you say that. Like I've been thinking, like there was a couple of days ago, I guess Saturday. I don't know if you watch women's basketball at all, but up here in South Carolina, women's basketball is huge. It's a big deal. Like the state shuts down for South Carolina basketball. Yeah. And so on Saturday was a semifinal game for the SEC championship. And South Carolina was playing Tennessee at halftime, had a 23-point lead. Tennessee kind of battled back and kind of came down the stretch. And Tennessee played a masterful game. The Tennessee coach coached a masterful game, came down 1.1 seconds left to go in the game. South Carolina was down by two. And they had to inbounds the ball from half court. Raven Johnson, who's our point guard, threw the ball in all the way, almost all the way across the court to 6'8" center, Camila Cardoso. They had to have a 3-point shot to win. And she stepped back, dribbled once, stepped back, and for the first time in her basketball career, shot up a 3-pointer. And she hit it. And they won the game by 1 point, sent them on to the final. And then from the final, they went on to defeat LSU yesterday to win the SEC championship. Mm-hmm. And I was talking with my daughter afterwards, and she said, I can't believe she shot that shot. She goes, I can't believe the courage it took to shoot that shot. She had never shot a 3-pointer before. And I looked at her and I didn't even really register the weight of what I was saying when I said it. Mm-hmm. But I said, just because it hasn't happened before doesn't mean it can't happen at all.
Right.
And she told me this morning, like we were going to school and I was taking her to school and she brought that up in an entirely different scenario. Mm-hmm. Dad, you just said, just because it hasn't happened before doesn't mean it can't happen at all. Mm-hmm. And I thought about those words and how in that moment, there's such a valuable lesson there for everyone. Like how many people are listening to this podcast right now that are kind of they're at that crossroads, right? Like they don't know what to do.
Right.
I'm trying to decide if I need to take that new job. I'm trying to decide, should I take that next step in my relationship? You're at a crossroads. You got to decide what to do. And the weight of that phrase, just because it hasn't happened before, doesn't mean it can't happen at all, plays into all of those situations. And I thought that was such a great scenario to use. And once again, we use sports as kind of this this analogy for life. But you know, she could have shied away from that, but she leaned into that right there, having never done it before, and just launched that thing up, hit it, and was one of the most historic things I've ever seen. Took over the internet for all day Saturday.
And that's what sports does too. But I love that, man. I mean, what a great sentiment, what a great story, what a great example of so much of what you've spoken about here, just in light of your own story. You know, again, there's not many examples of coaches that leave a sport, say like college coaching, no matter what the sport may be within that world, and just start over and do something completely new and make it work for themselves. We're both products of that. And so I can get to say to someone who's gone through it myself and to see what you're doing, the work it takes and it's not an easy transition. And so
it's easy to be, it's okay to be scared in that situation.
Oh, no doubt.
Like
no
it's
doubt.
Terrifying, right? Like you're stepping out into this world where everything is new. Like coaching was the comfortable place for us. We knew how to do that.
Exactly.
We were good at it, right?
Exactly.
Like we knew how to do that. And then to take that step. So anybody that's sitting on that at that crossroads right now, understand that it's just because you're afraid or you're nervous or you're anxious doesn't make you weak. It makes you normal. Like you being able to lean into that. Now what you do with that is everything, right? Like let that fear be your motivator. Let that anxiety motivate you to push through this problem, lean into it. But yeah, I mean, it's an entirely different kind of feeling, but that it's okay to be anxious about that. It would almost be not normal if you weren't anxious about it. Right.
Yeah. I mean, fear is fun, man. I mean, I always say that it's a privilege in many ways too. It's like, hey, you put yourself in a position to actually have fear, to have something on the line. It's cool that you get to do that because a lot of other people, they don't even have the opportunity to step into fear, to step into the unknown. And you and I are both examples of what it looks like to step into that. So just appreciate all this and just finishing on that notion of, you know, just because it hasn't happened before doesn't mean it can't happen at all. I think it's just such a wonderful part of this entire conversation. And it's a great way for us to finish this. Before I let you go though, man, like anywhere that people can sort of follow you, reach out to you, get in touch with you, anything like that. I know you're a big social media guy, right? Come on now. Where can we follow you?
SC Coaching Dad, I think is my Instagram. But then Facebook is that's where I always am. I'm one of those old people that uses Facebook. My Facebook page is just under McGee Moody. You can search it. You can follow it. Send a friend request. I mean, the thing I use that Facebook page for is I just kind of put my life on there. Like whatever it is, the good days, the bad days. I've had everything from, you know, great coaching experiences to my dogs ripping up a stuffed animal a couple of days ago. And it was all over my house. So, I mean, it's just my life. And And I do kind of use it almost as a, almost social media as a personal motivator for me. Like I, if I see something, if I have a, I see a great Kobe Bryant quote, mm-hmm. I'm going to put it up because I know in a year it's going to pop back up in my memories and I'm going to be able to kind of think about this situation over again. Right. So I almost use it as a personal journal.
I like that.
Yeah. I mean,
I like that, man. That's Facebook's awesome.
Kind of where I usually am the most. So,
well, McGee, man, listen, it's been great just having the opportunity to catch up properly and see you after a few years. And unless we're both planning on walking around Disneyland at some point here in the next few weeks and not bumping into each other again, just appreciate you coming on. Appreciate all the insight. Best of luck with all the work you're doing and the business moving forwards, man. And yeah, thanks again for joining us, dude.
I appreciate it, Steve, man. You're doing great stuff here. I love it. I think it's so useful, so important. I know it's helping a ton of people.
Appreciate that. Thanks, man. My thanks again to McGee for joining us on this episode, and really short and sweet in how I conclude this one. Just because it hasn't happened before doesn't mean it can't happen at all. Some sentiments there that McGee provided within the conversation, and really no better way to capture not only the conversation, but to capture the message that you should certainly be looking to take away from this conversation. Wherever you are in your journey right now, don't beat yourself up assuming that whatever hasn't happened yet cannot happen. Believe that it can and keep finding ways to work towards it. That optimism is going to serve you in the long term. So again, my thanks to McGee for joining us, and my thanks to you for joining us as always. Listeners, I appreciate each and every one of you as this podcast continues to climb on a global level into the top 50. Pretty soon in self-improvement and also education. I know people are benefiting from these discussions greatly. All I ask is on your way out is to subscribe and also rate the show. Providing that 5-star rating helps enormously, and I want to help more people gain access to what impacts you're receiving within our weekly episode. So be sure to rate the show on your way out, 5 stars ideally, and in addition to that, subscribe to the show. Thanks again. Appreciate all of you. Best of luck in anything and everything you've got going on within your world. And I look forward to doing this again with you very soon. Bye for now.